from WJCT in Jacksonville. This is our weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. I'm your host, Vince Kong, and this is Redux. For the week of June 30th, coming up on this episode of Redux, we bring you an update on a 2010 case that was originally ruled a suicide, but now has evolved into something altogether different.
The sheriff of St. Johns County has been putting out his version of events.
We'll bring you the latest on the death of a St. Augustine woman, Michelle O'Connell, with Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter Walt Bogdanich. Then, St. Augustine Mayor Nancy Shaver has left no doubt where she stands on the impact of sea level rise on her area. But when it comes to global warming,
the minute you go there, you aren't able to focus on the issues at hand.
Find out why. And then
somebody goes on and clicks share, and it goes on Facebook. Then, you know, like the big field of dominoes, it's out there.
Find out what one Florida politician is doing to help prevent websites that publish police mugshots from charging to remove those photos. Then, we'll bring you a story about something called
the clicks to bricks trend,
which is a new retail trend of companies responding to customers' needs. And finally,
we're here today to celebrate what you can accomplish when you work together for the people of the beaches and Jacksonville as a whole.
We'll bring folks living near the shore some good news and more on this episode of Redux. St. Augustine Mayor Nancy Shaver addressed the U.S. Green Building Council in Jacksonville earlier this past week. She argues the most effective strategy for spurring action to fight sea level rise is simply by making the business case. And she adds, during talks with constituents, she avoids using two words, climate change. WJCT's Ryan Bank has more.
Shaver has been a vocal advocate for resiliency planning, even becoming vice chair of the nascent organization Resiliency Florida. The group's mission is connecting local politicians and businesses to combat rising tides and worsening storm surges. The Democratic mayor of the nation's oldest city says in her experience, steering clear from the term climate change helps keep politics from getting in the way of policy.
The minute you go there, you aren't able to focus on the issues at hand, which are really what is it that we do to adapt and to build anew.
After President Donald Trump recently backed out of the International Paris Accord aimed at reducing carbon emissions, dozens of U.S. cities have symbolically declared support for the agreement. But Shaver echoes what FloridaPolitics.com reports as Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry's view. Those declarations are just lip service.
We're kind of a practical city. We take positions that are really ones that we can put some teeth into. And in terms of how we act as a city, we don't really have a program around CO2. We don't do those things.
Instead, Shaver says she's interested in getting buy-in from businesses to find free market solutions to help her city adapt to rising seas. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
Florida Governor Rick Scott has signed a law prohibiting websites that publish police mugshots from charging to remove those photos. WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride has the story.
Sarasota Republican Senator Greg Stube says websites are charging high prices to take down mugshots, even if the person pictured has had the charges cleared, which is called getting a record expunged.
What we did was pass the bill that if you legally had your record expunged, you had to send a letter to the website company or operator. They had so many days to comply. If they didn't comply, it created a civil cause of action under the Unfair and Deceptive Trade Practices Act, and that individual could file a lawsuit.
Stube says this could especially affect the lives of those who are charged with a crime as a juvenile and then later on in life
went to go get a job and didn't list that they had a criminal record because the record had been expunged for whatever reason. And then you just do a Google search and it pops up with their mugshot because these privately run mugshot companies.
Jacksonville public defender Charles Kofer says his clients could take advantage of the new law, but he doesn't think it's possible to erase all traces of arrest from the internet.
Somebody goes on and clicks share and it goes on Facebook. Then, you know, like the big field of dominoes, you know, it's out there.
A separate section of the bill that would have sealed the records of millions of people who were arrested but not convicted didn't become law, according to Governor Scott. Stubbe says,
well, there's some disagreement legally on all of this, and we may just have to do a bill next year to clear it up.
That's because a separate linked bill dealing with shielding arrests from public view did not pass committees. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
Think about it and understand it.
Since her death on September 2nd, 2010, in St. Johns County, authorities have maintained that 24-year-old Michelle O'Connell fatally shot herself with a service weapon belonging to her officer boyfriend, Jeremy Banks. The St. Johns County Sheriff's Office led the initial investigation, ruling the death a suicide, and Banks remains on the job while maintaining his innocence. Now, new information on the case has come to light. Three-time Pulitzer Prize winner, New York Times reporter Walt Bogdanich was a guest on First Coast Connect this past week to give us an update on the investigation into allegations from St. Johns County Sheriff David Shore against the person assigned to investigate the case. That's Rusty Rogers of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement.
Over the last 3 years, the sheriff, Sheriff Shore of St. Johns County, has been putting out his version of events and specifically attacking the conduct and investigative chops of Rusty Rogers, who was an FDLE agent. And I thought it was important to go back and to look at, you know, those allegations and hold them up to the light of day and see whether they stood up, because he was making serious allegations, so serious that Mr. Rogers was put on administrative leave for almost three years, took his gun away, his badge away. And what I found in looking at thousands and thousands of pages of records that were not available to me before, I found that much of what Sheriff Shore had been saying was basically innuendo and rumor, and that his men and he himself made no effort, really, to confirm much of what they said.
Rogers has since been cleared of any wrongdoing and was reinstated to the FDLE in March, but a federal civil case filed by Banks is still pending.
I should point out that not only will Mr. Rogers, if it goes to trial, have to testify under oath, but so will Sheriff Shore. So that will be interesting to see what he says under oath, because so much of what he said so far has not been held up under the light of day.
Meanwhile, Shore sent a letter to WJCT, which is posted on our website, accusing Bogdanich of, among many things, having never reported on the true narrative or legal findings of this case, and that Bogdanich worked diligently to perpetuate his own narrative and act as an advocate for those who do not accept the suicide findings.
I'm an advocate for the facts. I'm not an advocate for any side. That's what journalists do. They ask questions. And according to that statement, it's pretty clear to me that the sheriff is trying to change the subject. Let me be clear. He refused every single effort that I made to interview him, back for the first investigation that I did and the second one that I recently did. And I encourage everyone to look at it, find it on the Times website, and make their own conclusions as to, you know, where the facts lie. And, you know, I mean, I can also make this point. He, so far, has not sought any corrections from our newspaper. So what he's engaging now is in just basic name-calling. And, you know, that's okay. He ought to say what he's going to say. I don't fault him for that. I mean, it's a free country. I have to stick to the facts, however, as a journalist, and we've done that.
We provide a link to Bogdanich's piece from the New York Times, as well as a full unedited letter from Shore to WJCT. That's on our Redux page at WJCTnews.org. There you can also listen to the complete interview from First Coast Connect.
Monday night at 10, Route 66 gets you in the mood for the 4th of July holiday with a Beatles flashback. We'll play the complete Beatles for Sale album from vinyl in mono just like the day it was released in 1964 in England. In America, Capitol Records split the album into two and released it as Beatles 65 and Beatles 6. Hear the complete Beatles for Sale from the first track to the last track Monday night at 10 on 89.9 and around the world on the WJCT app.
Jacksonville's Whole Foods store is among the companies more than 400 nationwide that will soon be owned by retail giant Amazon. In this business brief, Modern City's founder Ennis Davis tells WJCT News director Jessica Palumbo, the sale is part of a retail trend of companies responding to customers' changing needs.
Ennis, Amazon buying Whole Foods, what trend does that embody?
The clicks to bricks trend. Basically, you have retailers with a strong online experience trying to move into the traditional brick and mortar experience to capture more of the market share.
And we also see that going the opposite direction, right?
Walmart, for example, is now going into the online experience and delivery experience, which brings us to another retail trend, which is grocery technology.
Okay.
So you have traditional grocery companies such as Walmart, Publix, experimenting with grocery delivery, as well as even going as far as to put restaurants within grocery stores. And in Jacksonville, a decent example of that is Winn-Dixie's new location in Bay Meadows, which features a Tampa-based coffee shop inside of it.
What changes in our society are we seeing that explain the changes in retail?
Well, there's a good chance that the shopping center, as we know of it today, will look completely different in 10 years. As millennials start to age, sustainability, healthy living has become a stronger factor.
So what are a couple of other trends that we're seeing in retail in Jacksonville?
The expansion of personal fitness companies into shopping centers. Also, continue to see more health conscious and fast casual restaurants. While on the other hand, you'll see your more traditional sit down restaurants continue to struggle a bit to maintain market share. And one last thing that we have not seen in Jacksonville just yet, but it is expanding rapidly within Florida, is the conversion of empty space into food halls.
Food halls?
Food halls.
Okay, what is that?
It's almost a 21st century example of what your old public market would have been.
Ah.
So under a single roof, you have a number of eateries, restaurants, and retailers coming together within that space. There are currently about 200 food halls today, and it's expected that that number is going to double by 2020 within the U.S.
Are there any plans to open one up in Jacksonville?
There have not been any plans announced just yet, but given that plans for food halls in all the other major cities in Florida have already been announced, or some food halls have already opened, it's only a matter of time.
Ennis Davis is co-founder of Modern Cities. That's moderncities.com. He spoke with WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo. Right now, roughly 2,000 kids in Jacksonville get free swimming lessons. But legislation that would have allowed for thousands of more kids to get free swimming lessons was withdrawn due to a lack of support. WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride explains.
7-year-old Laura Lay and her little brother Mark are taking swimming lessons at the Mandarin YMCA Tuesday. Their mom, Cheryl Leahy, says she nearly drowned as a kid and had to be resuscitated, so she's had a fear of water ever since.
I want them to be prepared so that they can not go through what I went through.
City Councilman Garrett Dennis wants every kid to have this opportunity, even if their parents can't afford it. He was asking for $200,000 for swim lessons and transportation for an additional 6,000 kids after two Jacksonville drownings this month.
Those parents will never, ever see their child get their diploma.
But Mayor Lenny Curry didn't support the emergency funding. City Chief Financial Officer Mike Weinstein says instead he'd like to fund year-round swim lessons. He explained it to council this way.
We would have facilities spread throughout the county opened all year for swimming lessons.
And Dennis's colleagues agreed, so he withdrew the bill.
It's a little disappointing because, of course, you know, I wanted it right now.
Still, this summer, city funding will provide lessons for between 1,600 and 1,700 kids. That's up from just 375 last summer. And the YMCA is providing free lessons to an additional 940 Northeast Florida kids at city pools and other locations. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
And finally, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry celebrated the end of a multi-million-dollar project to rebuild area beaches after last fall's Hurricane Matthew. But at the same time, as WJCT's Ryan Bank reports, a new climate study concludes beach erosion is quickening worldwide.
Workers at Neptune Beach Wednesday are using a drill of sorts to replant sea oats washed away by Hurricane Matthew. It's the finishing touch on a $22 million renourishment project that Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry calls a success.
We're here today to celebrate what you can accomplish when you work together for the people of the beaches and Jacksonville as a whole.
Jacksonville kicked in $7.5 million for the restoration, which was on its way to being completed before Matthew struck in early October and had to be restarted. This week, though, an international consortium of scientists based in China released a study concluding sea level rise is accelerating, and that will mean worsening beach erosion. Army Corps of Engineers Jacksonville Commander Colonel Jason Kirk says the Corps keeps tabs on climate change when planning projects like this one.
Then when we designed the project, we looked at expected sea level rise from our models, and we build in those buffers to build what will be a cost-effective, resilient project.
For now, Kirk says Northeast Florida still has more to gain from funding renourishment projects than it has to lose from rising seas. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
And that's our show. You can find all of our audio and web stories at wjctnews.org. You can also stream this podcast as well as all of our on-air content on the WJCT app, which is available on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And of course, find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. I'm Vince Kong, and thank you for listening.